Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, August 26th, 2020. Local news roundup. By the numbers, Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,120. Ector County negative, 18,471 out of 22,876 tested, with 285 pending, 66 deaths. Recovered, 3,318. Active, 736. Midland County, 3,094 confirmed, 64 deaths. Texas, 586,730 confirmed, with 4,724,559 tested. Total Texas deaths, 11,576. U.S. cases, 5,715,567 total confirmed, and 176,617 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Drive-in concert. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788, Midland, has scheduled a drive-in concert featuring the Josh Abbott Band at 8:30 p.m. Friday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center's parking lot. Parking lot entry opens at 7 p.m. Portable restroom facilities will be available. A face covering is required to walk to the restroom facilities. No concessions will be sold. Bring your own snacks and beverages. There will be no entry into the venue. All tickets must be purchased in advance at tinyurl.com/Y33G7EZJ. Movie Under the Stars. The Ellen Knoll Art Museum, 4909 East University, has scheduled Movie Under the Stars featuring the 2020 version of Emma from 8:45 to 10:30 p.m. Friday in the museum garden. Bring a lawn chair. Snacks will be provided. Admission is free. Space is limited to 30. CDC guidelines will be implemented. Masks are required. For more information, call 550-9696, email marketing@knollartmuseum.org, or visit knollartmuseum.org or tinyurl.com/Y6588PSW. Permian Golf Classic. Oil Field Helping Hands will present its second annual Permian Golf Classic from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday at the Green Tree Country Club, 4900 Green Tree Boulevard in Midland. Registration begins at 10 a.m. and tee time is at 11 a.m. To pre-register or for more information, visit www.oilfieldhelpinghands.org. The Bridge to Live Stream Special Remembrance. The Bridge will be live streaming a special remembrance service and prayer vigil to honor victims, survivors, and first responders impacted by the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting, 6 p.m. Sunday. The in-person event will just be for the victims and their families, as well as a few invited first responders, but will live stream the event for the general public and are hoping the community, both near and far, will be able to join virtually for a night of remembering, honoring, prayer, and hope. All the victims will be honored during the event, along with first responders of the community. prayer service set to mark shooting. The various ministerial alliances of the Permian Basin will offer a prayer service remembering the loss of life and injuries to community members inflicted by a gunman 1 year ago. The service will be held at 8 p.m. Monday in the west parking lot of Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane. Participants are invited to drive into the parking lot and stay in their cars for the 30-minute event, which will include ministers from a variety of faith traditions. Those gathered will be able to tune into the radio and hear the service in their cars. The service will conclude with the ringing of bells for the lives lost and wounded, August 31st, 2019. All of us in this community were impacted by the events of 8/31, stated Connection Christian Church co-pastor Reverend Dr. Don Weeks. It is important we come together in whatever safe way we can during this pandemic to lift each other up and to pray for those who are still deeply suffering from this tragedy. We will gather to gain strength and help each other find the light of God's presence with us. For more information, visit Connection Christian Church's website, odessaconnection.church, their Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Odessa Connect, or call the church office at 432-332-2954. ECISD police arrest teacher charged with improper relationship with student. Over the weekend of August 8th and 9th, before students returned for the school year, two former students of Odessa Collegiate Academy reported that a teacher and a student at the school had been involved in an improper relationship during the spring semester. District officials immediately placed the teacher on paid administrative leave, and ECISD police began an investigation. That investigation culminated Tuesday with the arrest of the teacher, William Boone, on the charge of improper relationship between educator and student, a second-degree felony. He was booked into the Midland County Jail. Boone lives in Midland. This is extremely disturbing, ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said in a news release. We are angry. Inappropriate behavior will not be As a school district, we have taken steps to combat this. We require sexual harassment training each year, and this training includes very clear warnings of the consequences for employee-student relationships. There is no excuse for our employees to misunderstand the seriousness of these actions. We want you, our staff, our parents, and our community to know we will continue to do everything we can to prevent this behavior. I want to add, we are extremely thankful for our teachers, the 99.9% of them who are committed to helping kids every day. The release said district officials also want to thank the students who came forward with this information and ask all community members that if they suspect something like this is happening, please alert the school district, or law enforcement. Boone began teaching in ECISD in August 2000 and has worked at Crockett Middle School in addition to OCA with no prior complaints. St. John's Glad to Be Back in Session by Ruth Campbell. After being out since March because of COVID-19, the general consensus around St. John's Episcopal School is students and teachers are happy to be back in class. Classes are being kept to a maximum of 12 students, and there isn't any mixing between grades, head of school Emily McDonnell said. School started August 17th, but there was summer school. We're strictly face-to-face. We're not doing hybrid. And so for us to have kids back in the classrooms, that was what my teachers were so excited about. They were real troopers about going ahead and learning how to do all of that online. They had a week and a half to learn that, and they did a great job. The families did a good job, but it's better having them back in school. We love them. Any teacher loves having them in person, McDaniel said. It's been different returning to class with all the required safeguards. For example, in the middle school, they have to wipe down all the tables and desks before they can change classes. All of our classes, 3 through 5th grade, stay in their rooms, so they're eating lunch in their rooms. Music and Spanish and things like that, those teachers go to the rooms instead of having the kids go to the music room or doing anything like that, McDaniel said. The only time kids leave is to go to the bathroom, wash their hands, and go to recess or PE. That's all outside, she added. St. John's has about 140 students ages 3 through 8th grade. McDaniel said there is room for a few more, but not many. They had a model from the Southern Association of Episcopal Schools to figure out how many students could be in a classroom by square footage. They couldn't take any more than 12 per class. Masks are not required for 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, and kindergarten students. But masks are required for students in 1st through 8th grade. St. John's is still having choir and band, but distances are larger between students, and they all have to face the same way in the chapel. Chapel is held every morning over Zoom. A lot of people thought it would be hard for the younger children to keep their masks on, but McDaniel said that hasn't been the case. They've done it with the students. We had summer school this summer, and so the students that were in Sunday school, they did an awesome job wearing their masks and keeping hands washed and all of that. The school went all remote in March, and it was decided as a task force, which was made up of part of the Board of Trustees, part of the Friends of St. John's, and some administrators, that it would be best if one platform was used for students and the teachers would use Remind to work with parents. That worked really, really well because we were all in the same place. So for our parents who had more than one student here, they didn't have to go find what each teacher wanted to use for the classrooms, McDaniel said. Even 3- and 4-year-olds participating in Zoom meetings wasn't that much of a challenge. It can be done, she said. It's different, but it can be done. My teachers also used YouTube, so they would pre-record some lessons when they were teaching so that parents and the kids could go back if the kids didn't understand the assignment. They could go back and reference that several times. I think that's what most teachers did worldwide because it wasn't just us. One good thing that came out of the pandemic was that students now have Google Classroom emails. If they're sick, their teachers can email them the homework assignments they're missing. That way, you don't have to send papers home and deal with that. Some of my middle school teachers have decided to go paperless and do all their assignments like that, McDaniel said. She said enrollment is down some because parents decided to homeschool their children. That makes a difference in your enrollment, she added. She noted that they would normally have 15 to 18 students per class. Online classes can be beneficial, but McDaniel observed that people need to be around other people, and that's especially true for children. I don't mean to the point where you're risking their lives or taking unnecessary chances, but if you look how many adults have had such a hard time with the isolation, it's even more so for children to not be able to have that social aspect. For our students coming back, I think a big part of making them feel safe, aside from all these guidelines we have to go by, is the fact that school gives them that structure. It's that sameness. They know what to expect every day when they walk in this building and come in with their teachers. We as adults, we don't know what to expect day to day, save from the pandemic. So for all of us trying to internalize the differences every single day, and we've had a lot of years to learn how to do it, but these little guys, they hear everything on the news. Unless you have no TVs and no devices in your house, they're going to hear about it. Here we are with our thermometer guns before they're even out of the car. We're taking their temperature, and we have hand washing stations outside, and we have hand sanitizer. One of the kindergartners calls it hanitizer when they first walk in. Students are being taught to wash their hands for 20 seconds. Instead of teaching kids how to use a pencil, now we teach them how to wash their hands to the point where maybe they won't get coronavirus, McDaniel said. Fifth grade teacher Amanda Cardona is starting her seventh year at St. John's. She said she was pleasantly surprised and definitely kind of nervous about how it would go the first day. She has 12 students in her class. I think the teachers are handling it fairly well. The kids are handling it really well. So I think there's definitely a sense of normalcy that I was kind of worried we wouldn't feel. But we're feeling it, Cardona said. She added that she missed not being in school. That's the whole reason I like to do what I do. So I was super excited to come back. It had been too long. Speaking all at once, the students said it was amazing to be back in class, and it was hard to learn at home. Asked if they appreciated school more now, Matthew Darris said, 100 times yes. Ballroom Marfa names new curator. Ballroom Marfa recently announced the appointment of its new curator, Daisy Nam. Nam was recently the Marcia Tucker Senior Research Fellow at the new museum this winter and joins Ballroom from the Carpenter Center for the Visual Arts at Harvard University, where she served as the assistant director since 2015. Nam will work closely with the current team and the Board of Trustees to support the organization's mission and expand its visual arts program in Texas and abroad. Nam will broaden the dynamic curatorial vision at Ballroom, alongside programs director Sarah Melendez and curator-at-large Laura Copeland, pluralizing the organization's voice further and deepening our commitment to support artists as they make new work that enriches all of our lives. I have long admired Ballroom Marfa's dedication and support of the most vital artistic voices of today, Nam says. I'm thrilled and honored to now be part of the Ballroom team and look forward to contributing to and expanding their work through artist commissions and exhibitions. She recently co-organized 2020, a public program series on hindsight with themes on fertility, redress, channeling, and friendship. Nam is also the co-editor for the forthcoming publication Best, Letters from Asian Americans, published by Paper Monument and featuring artists, writers, and curators, including Mel Chin, Aruna D'Souza, Sophia Hernandez, Chong Kui, Byron Kim, Pamela M. Lee, Kathy Park Hong, Paul Pfeiffer, Lumi Tan, Asad Raza, Estate of Martin Wong, C. Spencer Yeh, Anika Yi, and more. Nam is presently organizing commissions for Ballroom Marfa's courtyard this fall, as well as working with Donna Huanca for a solo exhibition slated to open in June 2021. Alongside Laura Copeland, she will also help realize the production of Blessings of the Mystery, Ballroom Marfa's upcoming exhibition with Carolina Quesedo and David De Rosas, opening at the end of January 2021. Ballroom co-founder and artistic director Fairfax Dorn says Ballroom is so pleased that Daisy Nam will join the talented team in Marfa. As a fearless cultural producer and brilliant collaborator, she has been a powerful conduit for so many artists to realize their visions. We are beyond thrilled to have Daisy's important voice and perspective lead Ballroom's visual arts program and add to a rich dialogue with artists, performers, filmmakers, musicians, and visionary thinkers of all kinds. Nam organized exhibitions, publications, performances, and public programs at the Carpenter Center, working closely with artists to engage the campus community and public at large. She realized projects with important voices such as Basma Al-Sharif, Martin Beck, Matt Keegan, Renee Green, Michelle Lopez, Will Rawls, Carrie Tribe, among others. Previously, as the Assistant Director of Public Programs at the School of the Arts, Columbia University, she curated and produced 7 seasons of talks, screenings, performances, and workshops by noted artists such as Charles Atlas, Tania Bruguera, Nancy Holt, Ralph Lemon, Jill Magid, Isaac Julian, Alan Sekula, and Aki Sasamoto. Before her curatorial and programming roles, she worked at the Solomon R. Guggenheim Museum on fundraising initiatives. NAM's curatorial residencies and fellowships include Marsha Tucker Senior Research Fellow at the New Museum, winter 2019-20, Bellas Arts Projects in Bataan, Philippines, winter 2020, Surf Point Foundation in York, Maine, fall 2019, Asia Art Archive in American Leadership Group in New York, New York, summer 2019-20, Gwangju Biennial Foundation in Gwangju, South Korea, fall 2018. She holds a master's degree in curatorial and critical studies from Columbia University and a bachelor's degree in art history and cinema studies from New York University. She has taught at RISD as a visiting lecturer. For more information, visit www.ballroommarfa.org. Obituaries for Wednesday, August 26th. Adam Sinaceros. Adam Sinaceros, 66, passed away Saturday, August 22nd in Odessa. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Friday, August 28th at First Pentecostal Church with Jim Owens officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Adam was born November 9th, 1953 in Fabens. He married Beatrice Tijerina in 1972. Adam is survived by his wife Beatrice B. Sinaceros, 2 daughters, Marcia and Jennifer Sinaceros, 5 granddaughters, 5 great-grandsons, his siblings Natty Natividad, Eva Pena, Florencia Suarez, Raul Sinaceros, Sarah Velasquez, Maggie Ramirez, Corina Rodriguez, and Rachel Shoemaker. He is preceded in death by Pablo and Antonio Sinaceros, Naomi Andrade, Juan Sinaceros, and Lucy Chavez. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. A tribute video will be available on the website as well. John H. David. John H. David, born September 28, 1941, in Huntington, Arkansas, to Dorothy Mae Sharp David and Tommy Sampson David, passed away August 21st. He is survived by his sons, David W. David of Princeton, John David Jr. and wife Janice of Odessa, daughter Melinda White and husband TJ of Odessa, sisters Marty Mordock of Thomasville, Georgia, Troyce Wetz and husband John of Durham, California, Tani Robbins and husband Jamie of San Angelo, 4 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. John is preceded in death by his wife of 52 years, Marie, his father, Tommy Sampson David, his mother, Dorothy Mae Sharp, and a brother, Tommy Jack David. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you give a donation in John's honor to the Humane Society of Odessa, Post Office Box 749, Odessa 79760. A graveside service will be held Thursday, August 27th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Cheryl Jo Dedevoe. Cheryl Jo Dedevoe, 70, of Odessa, passed away August 22nd. He was born December 14th, 1949, to Rufus Dedevoe and Gersi Gautreau Dedevoe, in Houma, Louisiana, the eldest of 8 children. He was preceded in death by his parents. Surviving him is his wife of 38 years, Victoria, his son Christopher and wife Angela, son Sean, daughter Jessica Githens and husband Eric, daughter Sarah Clanton and husband Barrick, daughter Leah Christensen and husband Michael, and daughter Kate, and daughter Karen Ariola and husband Austin. He is also survived by 11 grandchildren, his brothers Clark, Doyle, Timothy, Philip, and George, sisters Cindy Horton and Lisa Donnelly, and many cousins, aunts, uncles, nieces, and nephews. A rosary will be held at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Friday, August 28th at 6 p.m. A memorial mass will be held at St. Elizabeth's at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 29th. In lieu of flowers, the family is asking for donations to Catholic Charities of Odessa or St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Cheryl Ruth Redmond Helmers. Cheryl Ruth Redmond Helmers, 84, passed away at her home in Odessa Friday, August 21st. She was born October 1st, 1935, in Wichita, Kansas, to Harold and Helen Redmond. She was preceded in death by her parents, her ex-husband, her brother Douglas Redmond, and a daughter, Vicky Carol Dominguez. She is survived by her sister, Pat Redmond Clayton, and husband, Bob, of Raytown, Missouri, son, George Stephen Helmers, and wife, Nancy, of McKinney, son-in-law, Ray Dominguez, of Monahans, 4 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 29th at the Unitarian Universalist Church, officiated by Cliff Buchanan. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Francis Anderson. Francis Anderson, 82, of Odessa, died Thursday, August 20th. A funeral service was held August 26th at American Heritage Funeral Home, and burial immediately followed at Fairview Cemetery in Midland. Norma Jo Timmons Brady. Norma Jo Timmons Brady, 95, of Odessa, died Sunday, August 23rd. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Keith Davis. Keith Davis, 66, of Odessa, died Sunday, August 23rd. A graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. August 28th at Sunset Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are by Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Analicia Ubaye Franco. Analicia Ubaye Franco, 20, of Odessa, died Friday, August 21st. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Monday, August 31st at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lisa Rose Martin Jackson. Lisa Rose Martin Jackson, 62, of Odessa, died Sunday, August 23rd. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Virgil Edward Young Sr. Virgil Edward Young Sr., 91, of Austin, died Monday, August 24th. He was born in Austin, November 27th, 1928, son of the late Addie Searcy and Edwin Young. He was married to L. Ray Bundage Young. A family celebration of his life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, August 28th at Evergreen Cemetery in Austin. Flowers can be delivered to ALCBF 1309 East 12th in Austin. Go to www.alcbf.com for greater information. The family has selected Dr. Barry J.W. the Shepherd Franklin, CFSP, at a life celebration by Franklin to fulfill his final earthly celebration with great excellence.
Health and wellness. Misconceptions exist about health, wellness. Dr. Padmaja Patel, Midland Health. With the U.S. being the only profit-motivated healthcare system in the world, it is no surprise that it also has one of the most expensive healthcare systems of any nation. There's this notion that the more we spend, perhaps the more we will gain in return. Of every U.S. federal income tax dollar in 2018, 29.6 cents went to healthcare, a more significant amount now even than the military receives. If spending more money would make us healthier, the U.S. would be the healthiest country in the world. Unfortunately, we ignore the data, which clearly shows that we rank at the bottom when it comes to healthcare outcomes compared to other developed nations in the world. Let's talk about some of the common misconceptions people have about health and wellness. Annual health checks do not reduce illness and mortality. The routine of getting an annual physical exam dates back nearly a century in America, but lately, many health authorities have questioned whether this is beneficial. Yet, most of the public expects to have a comprehensive annual exam and extensive routine blood tests each year. For the most part, many physicians continue to perform annual examinations and order some of the same tests that have proven ineffectual because otherwise, patients might feel unsatisfied with their visit. Evidence suggests that the more physical and laboratory examinations they perform, the better their patients feel. Also, let us not forget, there's a financial incentive. Physicians get paid to do these exams. These annual checkups are not associated with lower mortality rates in studies, meaning they were not associated with living longer or a lower risk of dying from heart disease, stroke, or cancer. They often increase the number of new diagnoses. These routine exams could lead to overdiagnosis, unnecessary treatment, anxiety from false positive tests, false reassurance from false negative test results, the possible continuation of unhealthy behaviors because of negative test results, and difficulties getting health insurance with new diagnosis of pre-existing conditions. I believe that if physicians would focus less on ordering expensive and elaborate laboratory tests and instead spend more time at these annual exams talking about lifestyle changes that could help prevent 80% of chronic diseases, e.g. diabetes, hypertension, coronary artery disease, we would see a different outcome. Health cannot come from bottles of vitamin and mineral tablets. The things that make us healthy and keep us healthy are freely available without any professional help and any side effects. The field of nutrition has become highly commercialized. The process of extracting nutrients from whole foods and repackaging them into pills to sell has become a multi-billion dollar industry. Most dietary supplements don't do anything, yet we spend billions of dollars on them each year. There is a vast profit-making industry that offers vitamins, supplements, and infusions as a quick fix for various health ailments without any proven evidence. I am proud to inform you that we offer some of the most cost-effective, evidence-based, and affordable healthcare solutions at the Lifestyle Medicine Center. We also have seen some amazing transformations and promising disease reversal. If you are interested in seeking the right advice and learning about lifestyle changes that could prevent and treat some chronic disease processes, it could also reverse it. Change is hard, uncomfortable, and requires discipline and commitment. Let this year's preventative annual exams not be just about ordering tests and providing you with a false sense of security, but rather about disrupting the status quo to effect real change in health outcomes, helping you adopt healthier habits, and hopefully have you rely less on prescription medications. Dr. Padmaja Patel is Medical Director at Lifestyle Medicine Center.
This is the oil page. This article is entitled, Hurricane Damage Could Shut Down Refineries, by Brian K. Sullivan, Bloomberg. Hurricane Laura is poised to become a roof-ripping Category 3 storm when it comes ashore along the Texas-Louisiana coast, threatening to inflict as much as $12 billion of damage on the region and potentially shutting 12% of the U.S. oil refining capacity for months. Laura's winds will likely peak at 115 miles per hour as it comes ashore late Wednesday or early Thursday, the National Hurricane Center said. The storm has already disrupted offshore oil and natural gas production, shuttered refineries and export terminals, and prompted mandatory evacuations. It would be the first major system to hit the Gulf Coast since Michael in 2018. On its current track, Laura will likely cause about $5 billion in losses. But if the intensity or track shifts for the worse, the total could run as high as $12 billion, according to Chuck Watson, a disaster modeler with Enki Research. About 10 to 12% of U.S. refining capacity could be shut for more than 6 months, he said. Laura will continue to rapidly intensify over the next 24 hours before making landfall, said Elizabeth Palumbi, a meteorologist with commercial forecaster Maxar. Models have been inching westward on where exactly Laura will approach, so any location from Corpus Christi to west central Louisiana is currently at risk. The tropical threat has prompted 82% of oil output and 57% of natural gas production in the Gulf of Mexico to be shut, according to the Interior Department's Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. Gulf Coast refineries and petrochemical plants are often located in low-lying areas vulnerable to flooding. In 2017, an Arkema SA chemical plant about 25 miles east of Houston had a fire and explosion after it was flooded by Hurricane Harvey. Last week, Exxon shut its Beaumont refinery in Texas because of flooding from Tropical Storm Imelda. There is a chance wind shear could cut into Laura's top winds just before landfall, but that probably won't change the devastating impacts the storm will bring, said Rob Miller, a meteorologist with AccuWeather, Inc. Laura could push sea levels 6 to 10 feet higher where it comes ashore, and if conditions are right, storm surge could be as high as 15 feet, Miller said. Laura almost certainly won't be as damaging as Harvey, the last major hurricane to hit Texas. Harvey came ashore as a Category 4 storm and then got pinned in place by larger weather patterns, causing it to send record rains across the eastern half of the state for days. Laura may pack a severe punch at landfall, but it will quickly exit the area, reducing the potential for lingering effects. The last hurricane to hit Texas was Hanna in July. Energy platforms in the Gulf of Mexico that account for as much as 17% of America's oil production and about 3% of gas output are designed to withstand storms of this magnitude. They regularly shut and restart as systems pass through. Motiva Enterprises LLC, Valero Energy Corporation, and Total SE are shutting their Port Arthur refineries ahead of Laura. ExxonMobil Corporation's Baytown Refinery in southeast Texas and Phillips 66 Lake Charles Refinery in Louisiana are also shutting, according to people familiar with the matter. The city of Port Arthur will order some residents to flee the storm starting Tuesday, according to the city's website. Jefferson County put in place a mandatory evacuation order for all except essential personnel, such as employees of oil terminals, pipelines, oil supply facilities, hospitals, and utilities, it said in a statement. There might be some hesitation to flee Laura because of COVID-19, but if you live in a low-lying area near the coast, this storm is a bigger threat than the virus, Watson said. Laura is poised to menace the epicenter of the U.S. liquefied natural gas export industry, where terminals are located. Chenier Energy, Inc. said it was temporarily suspending operations at its Sabine Pass terminal in Louisiana, the nation's largest. Although these terminals are built to withstand hurricane-force winds, the storms will prevent any new vessels from approaching, Daniel Myers, an analyst at Gelber & Associates, said in a report Monday. Western sugarcane in Louisiana between Lake Charles and Lafayette will be the most at risk from Laura, said Drew Lerner, president of World Weather, Inc. in Overland Park, Kansas. Things would be worse if the storm veers more to the east. For cotton crops, some parts of western Mississippi Delta area, central and interior parts of Arkansas also could be impacted, he said. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards, and Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves have all declared emergencies. Laura has already killed at least 9 people in Haiti and the Dominican Republic, the Associated Press reported. 13 storms have now formed across the Atlantic this year, including 5 that hit the U.S. Tropical Storm Marco came ashore in Louisiana late Monday, only to quickly fall apart.
This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. Opinion. National View. Women are still fighting for political equality. The Point. The struggle for women's rights continues 100 years after winning the right to vote. A woman named Shelley Tallhurst offered a sadly prophetic observation at a September 7th, 1920 event in Los Angeles, celebrating the passage of a constitutional amendment guaranteeing women the right to vote. "For 1,000 years, we have had a certain viewpoint," Tallhurst said. "This celebration marks the change of that viewpoint, but it will be a long time in coming about. We cannot change the psychology of the world in a day, but that change will be profound and lasting." Could Tallhurst and the other women commemorating the momentous occasion have imagined that, in the fantastically distant world of 2020, women would still be fighting for some of the same things? Political power, equal treatment under the law, and wage parity. Or that not one woman would have yet been elected to the highest political office. Would they be dismayed, as we are, that in 2020 women are subjected to the same sexist insults that were hurled at the suffragists who dared to suggest that they should be treated as equals? Perhaps they could imagine it. After all, it had taken... Perhaps they could imagine it. After all, it had taken more than 70 years of struggle to reach that moment. The women's suffrage movement was birthed in 1848 during a meeting of like-minded women and men in Seneca Falls, New York, and might have faltered but for the determination of generations of women, including the courageous black women, whose contributions to the cause were too often overlooked by the history books. It wasn't until August 18, 1920, when Tennessee became the 36th state to ratify it, that the 19th Amendment met the constitutional minimum for passage. California had enfranchised its female citizens nearly a decade earlier. Indeed, 21 U.S. states allowed women to vote as early as 1918. But it is likely that Tallhurst and her cohort would nevertheless be gratified to see that tremendous progress has been made with the help of women's voting power, even if true equality is still a long way off. There are laws requiring equal access to education and banning employment discrimination. The Equal Rights Amendment, authored by suffragist leader Alice Paul in 1923, has finally secured the ratification of the crucial 38th state needed for passage, though it is still mired in challenges because of an expired deadline. 103 years after Montana sent the first woman to Congress, Jeanette Rankin, a Republican and progressive, political parties have changed a bit over the last century as well. 127 women currently serve in the U.S. House and Senate. 3 female jurists sit on the U.S. Supreme Court. This week, a woman of color, one who is not just black but also Asian, became the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, and it is women who are seen as pivotal swing voters in the presidential election. The political, social, and economic parity the suffragists dreamed about a century ago has been long delayed, but it is coming. Let's not put it off any longer. The Los Angeles Times.
Hi, This is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. Letters to the Editor. Booker has passion for service. In November, we all have an opportunity to decide who becomes our Midland Independent School District Board Trustee for District 1 for the next 4 years. Texcon Management, Inc. is endorsing Michael Booker for this important role in order to help build public support, improve our public education system, and lead our administrators/educators through this terrible health crisis pandemic while considering the value of a quality education versus the safety of our children, through this economic recession while overseeing adequate staffing levels, sound facilities, and budgetary challenges, and unto positive teamwork-driven fruitful relationships with fellow board members, the superintendent, and the public, into a new era of racial justice and educational quality for all of our children. Mr. Booker has proved his passion to serve due to his selfless and voluntary services to our nation's armed forces, his interaction and support of area youth programs, as well as his example to his own children, make him the best candidate for District 1's board service. We will give our full support to Michael Booker and his family. Signed, Luis Esquivel, President and Owner.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. Other Voices. Letter to the Editor. Lead-free water main piping. Well, Flint, Michigan residents won their suit and will be compensated by taxpayers for the negligent action of the Water Authority diversion of water through the city's lead water supply piping system. This will now be precedent in future cases against municipalities that provide water through lead water main piping. The elimination of lead from fixtures, piping, and even lead tin solder used to connect copper and brass piping in fixtures was codified some 30-plus years ago. See https://www.epa.gov/sdwa/use-lead-free-pipes-fittings-fixtures-solder-and-flux-drinking-water. When this became codified, my dad talked with me about it. He believed it would eventually become a giant issue over time. As a heavy equipment operator during the post-World War II housing construction development, he trenched, laid, and buried lead water supply piping that connected to the city's lead water mains. Other things are far more important here in Odessa. Lighted art in the 87th Street median, art at the JBS University intersection, conversion of the firehouse at Lawndale Park into a community center, infrastructure for the convention center, and other above-ground visible objects. The Odessa water supply main piping in the older area of the city is lead. I asked one of the construction supervisors on the Marriott Hotel project what the water mains were composed of when they connected to them. Lead, he said. Douglas Moss, Odessa.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Cause of High Hemoglobin Level. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 51-year-old male in very good health. I have had blood tests taken yearly for the past 15-plus years. Nearly every test shows high hemoglobin. My average is 17.4, but has been as high as 18.1 within the past several years. Anything above 17.5 is considered high. My primary care physician was never concerned. He said that my numbers were not much over the threshold, and that as long as the numbers hold steady and are not increasing, there is nothing I should do about it. He retired a year ago, and my new doctor is very concerned. I was sent to a hematologist who also was concerned about the high hemoglobin. We discussed what could cause this and ruled out everything, including using performance-enhancing drugs, sleep apnea, etc. She ran another set of blood tests to check for genetic markers for polycythemia vera. They came back negative. I did not have a bone marrow biopsy nor a test for erythropoietin. Is there any reason to keep searching for a cause when it seems I've exhausted the list? The primary concern is that I am at an increased risk of blood clotting that could cause a stroke or heart attack, so my doctor suggested I take baby aspirin. Should I have my blood's clotting ability tested? Can I continue to donate blood? LB. Answer. The first thing in deciding what to do after an unexpected test result is to decide whether it is really abnormal. The range of normal values provided by the laboratory represent where 95% of people without apparent illness would be. That means 5% of healthy people will have a lab result that is outside the published range. If you do 20 lab tests, which isn't uncommon, 36% of people will have at least one abnormal result. Low hemoglobin levels, anemias, are very common, but high hemoglobin levels are much less so. It seems your former primary care physician determined that your hemoglobin result was normal for you, but your new doctor wasn't so sure. An evaluation for the most common causes of high hemoglobin is reasonable, as some of them are quite serious. Polycythemia vera is a blood cancer, but the genetic tests you had make polycythemia vera unlikely. I am surprised you did not have an erythropoietin level, as most experts find that is an important test to evaluate high hemoglobin levels. A high EPO level indicates that something is stimulating your bone marrow to make more red blood cells. Sleep apnea was one good thought. High altitude, a defect in the wall of the heart, carbon monoxide poisoning, and rarely EPO-producing tumors would be worth considering. A low EPO level would be more suggestive of polycythemia vera.
Dear Abby, young man debates merits of keeping his virginity. Dear Abby, I'm a 28-year-old man who is still a virgin. I always wanted to be intimate with a virgin female for my first time, but I have never met one. I've had opportunities for sex, but refrained because she wasn't a virgin. The older I've gotten, the harder it has become to achieve my dream of being someone's first and sharing this wonderful experience together. I doubt there are any virgin females my age left. I know I have missed out on an important aspect of life that so many others have had. Should I start dating younger women? Or let go of my fairy tale first time fantasy and have sex with just anybody, knowing I'll regret it? Or should I hold out longer and wait for another virgin to come into my life? Fairy tale dream. Dear fairy tale dream, consider pushing the pause button on your fantasy until the pandemic is under control and do nothing that you know you'll regret. Before going forward, figure out why sex with another virgin is so important to you. Once you have the answer to that, consider what you have to offer a girl like the one you fantasize about. Many virgins are saving themselves for marriage. If you are willing to wait until marriage to fulfill your fantasy, you may find what you're looking for, or not. Dear Abby, I'm 55 and recently started dating Paul, a 54-year-old man. His 26-year-old daughter, Andrea, lives with him. My problem is she invites herself along on our weekend getaways, small trips, etc. He tells me he knows it's a problem. Andrea is a college graduate working for her dad's company, but she has no outside interests, no social skills, and she's afraid to talk to people one-on-one. She also doesn't care about her appearance. Paul doesn't know what to do. His daughter doesn't want to live with her mom, and he's trying to get her acclimated to being her own person and independent. I suggested a life coach. He knows he enables her to a certain extent. Other than this issue, our relationship is wonderful. Please help. Three's a crowd in the Midwest. Dear Three's a crowd, It should be obvious that Paul's attempts to help his daughter not only haven't worked, but may have contributed to her problem. She needs professional help for her severe social anxiety. Start with her physician. Her doctor or insurance company can refer her to someone qualified. Her father should insist upon this, rather than continue to enable her. Dear Abby, I was cheated on by my ex-husband. Since our divorce, I am interested only in married men. I have been to therapy, but I can't seem to shake it. I hit on married men because I don't believe all men are faithful. Is this unhealthy? And what can I do about it? Not right in the North. Dear Not Right, what you're doing is definitely unhealthy. You didn't mention how long ago your divorce happened, but hitting on married men may be your way of ensuring that you won't become so deeply involved your heart is broken again. Perhaps you will be less inclined to continue these liaisons if, before starting another one, you take a moment to consider their effect on the wives and children involved. P.S. And since your first therapist was unable to help you, contact another one. Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Virgo and a moon in Sagittarius. Happy birthday for Wednesday, August 26, 2020. Self-contained and brilliant, you give quietly to the world. If not, you feel frustrated and unproductive. The latter half of your year is a triumph. You are top in your field, so this is well deserved. If single, you may decide to change your life this year and leave many suitors behind. If attached, you've created a beautiful life together and make great parents. Capricorn gives the best advice. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Friendships with foreign-born people or those of a different generation will be enjoyed today. Travel plans for the future, which have been put off for what seems like forever, are finally finalized. Opportunities and good fortune increase. Growth is the keynote. Tonight, collapse in relief. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Today is a time to focus on self-understanding. Consider the axiom from the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. Know thyself. Adapt to changes. Use care regarding promises or signing documents. The terms might be difficult to fulfill, especially if a legal matter is involved. Tonight, saved. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 2 stars. A close partner assumes new responsibilities and or faces an obstacle. Be supportive, but remember that sometimes there is just so much that can be done. Back away from anyone who becomes overly demanding. Tonight, take some quiet time out for yourself. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 2 stars. Maintaining health and fitness should be at the forefront. Your personal health and that of a loved one or cherished animal companion. Stay vigilant and well-informed. Address any health concerns immediately, and all is well. Tonight, plan to stay up late. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Honor the deepest stirrings of your heart by expressing true love. Today brings a sense of ease and accomplishment. Pressure lessens. A goal is reached. Take a vacation and appreciate summer sports, as they are. Tonight, are you blitzed out yet? Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Today brings a surprise regarding your family. A relative might announce a move. A peek at your genealogy offers intriguing perspectives concerning ancestors. Repeating patterns. Tonight, it's like you write the love story of your family. It's a completely different view. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Others will be persuaded by your eloquence. You'll greatly enjoy discussing new ideas. Adopt a live-and-let-live attitude toward those who don't agree. You experience a breakthrough regarding goals. Past efforts are rewarded and appreciated. Tonight, you celebrate with travel plans and a ticket. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Today begins with an emphasis on finances. Budgeting for a special purchase will be a consideration. The pace can get rather hyper. You're burning the candle at both ends. time to regroup. Tonight, get a good night's rest and sleep. You really need it. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. Independent and outspoken, you learn best from experience. You seldom appreciate or heed advice. Today, your energy level skyrockets and the accelerated inner fire continues all day. You get a lot of attention. Tonight, answer all the invites. RSVP that you will attend. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Today is a quiet day. Extra hours of sleep or meditation can be very healing. Express tolerance regarding a relative who has been difficult. Seek to make your residence more comfortable and functional. Tonight, take a long, soothing herbal bath. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. News arrives concerning one who's been a part of your past. An awareness of how everything that happens is connected to the sacrifice of something else is a recurring theme in your spiritual path now. Tonight, talk about this and you'll make a fortune. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. You'll sense undercurrents and competition regarding professional aspirations and status. Stay flexible and adapt to changes. Research new developments in your field, especially regarding science and technology. Tonight, you'll feel like you're living a mystery detective book and its life. Born today, nun Mother Teresa, 1910, mathematician Katherine Johnson, 1918, comedian Melissa McCarthy, 1970.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.